Yeah.
The replication system, could it be used bidirectional or even more, so that the active firewall could receive packets, so that you could
use it for okay. I'm going to repeat the question for the recordings. The question was if the state replication protocol can be used bidirectional, so you'd no longer have a failover, but like a load distribution system. This is the next step, yes. It's taken into consideration in the design, but I have no plans of implementing it right now. But the design allows for this later extension, yes. It's the obvious next step, but first I need to find somebody to fund the first step. Okay.
Rather than adding in the new features, a lot of the problems I find with IP tables is the load. When you said if you have 2 gigabit Ethernet cards into it, the load on the box when you're sending a lot of packets in with a complex set of rules, the issue is more the optimization of the processing of the tables than it is with the actual features or the payload.
Yeah.
How much work are you actually doing on improving that?
The question is, if you have a very highly loaded net filter box, like with gigabit Ethernet, which has to forward lots of packets, and then you change the rule set, the load is getting really high at the moment you update the rule set. This is mainly because we need to do a lot of loop detection, for example, in the rule set, and it has to be in the kernel. So somebody sends a rule set into the kernel, and then in the kernel we need to assure that there are no loops inside, because if the first packet would hit a loop, this CPU inside the kernel would just never ever leave that loop. So we need to have loop detection, we need to have consistency checks, we need to verify that the data provided by user space was correct and in the correct range, as the structures have the right size and all that kind of stuff. And it's absolutely necessary. We cannot just skip that step, because otherwise it would become very easy to crash a net filter box by sending some invalid IP tables data over the interface. So with IP tables, it's not going to change. It's going to stay like it is. But in PKT tables, the problem is not that problematic anymore, because you will never have this atomic transaction anymore. So if you have a dynamic firewall rule set, the changes will normally be relatively small. So you don't change 10,000 rules at a time usually. So you just change, you know, one rule, 10 rule, maybe 20 rules, which is a very small change, and so there is not this single big change all the time. How do you currently change your rule set? Is it just a single command, or are you adding are you calling IP tables like 10 times right now?
Typically, I flush the system before I load in the new rules a lot of the time, because it's the only way to.
Yeah, but when you load in the new rules, are you using like 100 IP tables command lines? No.
It's usually just one or two. It's usually appending in. I usually try and structure it so that the the rule set is.
General performance and scalability of the structure. Rather than just at the change times.
So, yeah, also one of the big problems I have in terms of persuading them to use IP tables on commercial systems is just the general load over the whole usage as well.
The question is that the general load in IP tables is as well very high. I disagree with that. There's a lot of performance tuning you can do right now. And then IP tables itself. This leads to the question on how should I design my IP tables rule set.
You need to compile the rule set like a Cisco.
No. Actually, can we take other questions first? This is going to lead to a discussion which will take a lot of time. Other questions, yeah.
I just started the presentation. Does IPv6 support connection tracking?
No, IPv6 does not. Connection tracking does not support IPv6. There is no. This is another issue, and it's again an issue of a certain complexity. in an ideal world, we would have a layer 3 independent. I've been talking about layer 3 independent IP tables. In an ideal world, we would have layer 3 independent connection tracking, which would enable us to do IPv4 to IPv6 transition net and still having it in the connection tracking, because then we could represent an IPv4 end and an IPv6 end in a single connection tracking table entry, blah, blah, blah. This is something, yeah, lots of people want it, but who's going to do it in what time? It's like, I'm sorry, there are no plans for that right now. This issue came up a couple of times, but yeah. Sorry. Questions? Yeah.
You mentioned that when you have a high availability solution, then you use a private Ethernet segment. Mm-hmm. You don't need security because it's dedicated to that usually. But because it's in the same physical location as you mentioned, but usually it's not totally true. I mean, if you are serious about high availability, then they are at least in different buildings. So maybe you only have a limited number of cables running between these buildings. Is it to avoid recabling and stuff like that? Would it be realistic to share this with some low traffic Ethernet segment or something like that?
Yes, certainly. I mean, the question was, the current plan for the failover solution uses a private Ethernet segment or a private network segment for the state replication protocol, and I said that you don't care about security because it's usually at the same physical location. But if you have good high availability systems, you put them in different buildings, and then you have maybe a limited number of cables between those two buildings, which results in you don't have an extra cable for the state replication of IP tables. I honestly consider this as a minor issue. People could use VLAN, that's one of the questions, one of the answers. Of course you can use this Ethernet segment for something else. The only thing you need to make sure is that you don't violate the ordering requirement, so put no routers in the middle. Switches is okay, they don't reorder, at least not that I am aware of.
Just a simple MD5 key would be useful.
Pardon?
Just a simple MD5 key to authenticate between different parties, otherwise you can come in and sniff the traffic.
Yes, you can. And as I say, I really don't care right now. And it's not because I don't want to care. It's because it's a significant additional performance penalty to introduce the state replication in the first place. The load on the active firewall, I estimated to be almost twice as what we have right now. And if I add some simple authentication to those packets, you need to in the case that you are you have a firewall in front of HTTP servers, where you have very a tremendous amount of very short-lived TCP connections, and you will have like a state update with every packet, so your state replication protocol will contain as many packets as your real-world data you're processing on the active firewall. So this is putting an extremely high load on the I/O interface of your active firewall and very high CPU load. So it's already a very, very expensive operation, and I don't want to make it more expensive for anything. If you need security, put something in between which encrypts the traffic. You know, it can be a different box. But please don't add encryption or authentication on the firewall, which already has enough to do. I mean, nothing prevents you from using like OpenVPN or something in the middle. Question.
There's a part in replication that I didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
You say that the slave can tune up to the master, and that eventually in the future the master will be able to catch up to what they're doing in terms of traffic analysis. What happens if you unplug one slave? Because you said the poor man's solution.
Mm-hmm.
If you unplug the slave, it comes back. It might eventually, with the time, match up
mm-hmm.
closely to what's been in the table of the master, but the result is something is missing. What happens if with the rich man's solution? You unplug the slave and plug it back in after 2 hours of traffic?
We already, with the rich man's failover,
Repeat question.
The question was, in the Richman failover, what happens when one of the machines is unplugged or rebooted? Because it also loses all the state information which has gathered up to that point. There's no difference in that. But in the Richman's failover, in the real state replication, we already have a mechanism to transfer state updates to the slave firewall. So the slave would just notify the master that it wants to receive a full dump, and then everything is transferred using the state replication protocol, and it's synchronized again. I haven't mentioned it because it's a very small addition in this case of the real state replication. In the poor man case, we don't have any means of replicating state at all. That's why it is such a big issue in the poor man's failover solution. Yeah, question back there. The question was, why do we want to implement the protocol in kernel or the state replication in kernel, and why don't we do it in user space and delay the updates for some time? The answer to the second part of the question, why don't we delay or why don't we want to delay, is, again, I can explain it in the extreme case of HTTP 1.0 web servers, where you have like thousands and thousands or millions of very short-lived TCP connections, and you have so many state updates, you don't want to delay.
But that doesn't matter. I mean, they are so short-lived.
Okay, good. So they are short-lived. Then think about long-lived TCP connections. I can still make a point with them. It's like you have an SSH session which is running for 5 days, and something changes, you know. Like if you add, if you enable TCP window tracking, every packet will result in a state change because the window, the sequence number will change all the time. So like you had a sequence number change, and you delay the sequence number change for like let's say a couple of seconds, and after you had the sequence number change, within the delay period, your firewall gets down. You will never have that state on the other nodes, and this connection will not be able to work anymore because the state information is wrong. So that's why I said, in a perfect world, we would have this transaction scheme where state information is only updated on the master node when it knows that all the slave nodes have received this information in real time, so to speak. But of course, it's, as I said, we have to draw a line between performance and what is being, what we can do in the real world. User space has an additional problem. As I said, the state replication will add big additional load on the firewall. And if you do it in user space, you will add even more load because of the scheduling needed, and especially because of the copying between kernel and user space all the time.
If you do it delayed, then
no. Even if you do it delayed, you still copy all the state updates from kernel to user space. And every time you copy a state update from kernel to user space, the user space task will be scheduled to receive this message from the kernel. So there is, it's just too much overhead. You can do it, of course, but I think it's just not worth the effort. No, you can. It's not a problem of implementing in the user space. You can do it, but I think the only result of implementing in the user space will be that we see, the performance is too bad, so we need to implement it in kernel anyway. But for maybe debugging or development purpose, yes, there is no reason why it cannot be implemented in user space. No problem whatsoever. Yeah, questions further? There was somewhere?
Yes.
Question there?
Yeah, I didn't understand. In the slave firewall, do you still do connection tracking?
In slave firewall, do we still do connection tracking? As the slave firewall does not forward packets, it does not track. I mean, as there are no packets forwarded, there are no packets tracked. You can, of course, explicitly disable connection tracking to make sure that nothing else will that there is no influence from some local connections or whatsoever. It will be disabled. But even if it is enabled, I don't see any big harm or danger.
Okay.
Well, then you can create a log entry in syslog. It's like, I'm fucked. Please do something. I mean, of course, you can do stuff like initiate a new full table resync. But then if somebody somehow manages to create inconsistencies, you would always do full synchronization, and you maybe have a denial of service attack using... yeah, we can think about it later. But if we have this, we can think about other problems. Yeah, question.
You mentioned that the synchronization protocol is based on negative acknowledgments in case some packets are lost. Does it queue the packets that are received in the meantime? Okay, then what if you have one packet that has not been received, then 20 or 100 other packets, and well, just at that moment, the other the master crashes?
The question, we are getting into very, very detailed questions. The question was, the question was, we use a negative acknowledgement scheme, and what happens in the case when there is one packet missing at the receiver, like we are missing packet number 10, but we have packet number 11 to 150, and then the master crashes and it cannot retransmit this packet number 10. We have to decide what we do in this case. I'm unsure about that. I mean, we could process the further state packets. It might be a good idea. I don't see big problems with that, but still, as I said, if all of this has been implemented, the HA stuff, I'm happy. I'm quite happy. And of course, there are always problems remaining, and we can deal with those problems later. And the as I said, the HA, I have written there was even a mailing list with the only with failover discussions. There is, and my the paper I have presented in Ottawa, and IBM was trying. I mean, IBM was interested in sponsoring and is now not interested anymore, and blah blah blah. But I'm not sure when this will show up. The PKT tables and all the other stuff I've been talking about, the non-failover stuff, is higher priority. It has a higher priority to me.
Maybe if some synchronization packets are lost, it's not a problem because the next one will update us again.
This could be, but how the protocol is right now designed, there can be different state updates. So a state update for a particular connection doesn't necessarily contain all information about that connection. So if you have a state update about a sequence number and later you have a state update about a related FTP data connection, they're totally unrelated. The second one will not override the first one. It's just different state information within the same connection tracking entry. So it's, yeah. Further questions? None? Okay, that's great.
Are you monitoring what the vendor are doing?
Are we monitoring what the vendor are doing? I mean, the proprietary...
Checkpoint and other people like that.
I'm not really monitoring it, to be honest. I know a couple of people who do a Checkpoint Firewall 1 configuration for a living. And I know, for example, that the sponsoring of the failover is less than the license fee of a medium-sized Checkpoint Firewall 1 installation. I'm not really monitoring them. Lots of the issues covered by commercial or proprietary vendors are not issues where I see NetFilter IP tables to be responsible or to react. I don't want to care about configuration frontends, for example. It's not my problem. It's outside of the scope of the NetFilter IP tables project. We do the technology. How this is configured, I don't care. How people do transparent proxying of Oracle 8 connections in user space, I don't care. It's user space. It's outside of the scope of our project. So.
But one thing about Checkpoint is that they have a Linux version of their software.
Yeah.
Somehow attached to the kernel. I don't know exactly how, but
I even have a copy of the Checkpoint, legal copy of the Checkpoint firewall, but I haven't even installed it. I don't know what kind of mechanism they use.
There was an issue with a GPL, which might be solved by now, because of course they were patching the kernel somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. I'm not. The GPL issue. I mean, we always, Netfilter IP Tables project, we always have been very clear about our interpretation of the GPL and why we put everything under GPL, even in user space, not LGPL. And we don't share the interpretation which Linus has. So we say whatever is linked to Netfilter code needs to be GPL'd in the kernel, even if it's a separate kernel module. This is why everything we add right now is exported as export GPL only, the new symbols which are added right now with NewNet and other code to make this even more clear. I mean, you know about the export GPL only thing? Yeah, in 2.4.11 kernel it was added a new preprocessor macro where you can state that you have a symbol which is exported from your module and you want to make sure that only modules which are licensed under the GPL can use this symbol. And there was an agreement that we cannot change already existing APIs, but new APIs that are added in the Netfilter project, at least the code that I'm writing on, are exported as GPL-only symbols. I mean, my domain name is gnumungs.org. I mean, does anybody think anything else of me? No. Further questions?
Could you tell us something about software pattern? Because it's a big fight in Europe right now.
Most relevant
No, I mean, it's relevant in parts.
Feature which are maybe patents.
Software patents. I'm going to give a short statement. I know about the software patent discussions. I'm a member of, you know, lots of organizations in Germany who care about software patent and EU copyright directive issues. I'm going to leave the European Union when software patents are enforced in Europe.
Where do you go?
Switzerland.
Brazil, for example. I've lived in Brazil for half a year already. I can live there. I speak Portuguese. The free trade area of the Americas, which would introduce software patents in Latin America, is, after the recent elections in Brazil with a new president, it's not going to happen with Brazil. So I don't know. But for the project, I totally disagree with software patents, and I personally don't respect software patents in my code. And I'm not going to, going to live or go to places where the software patents are enforced. I'm not going to write any code from there or something. So even right now, the Netfilter IP tables code might, but according to interpretation of certain patents, might violate a couple of software patents. I did some research on the USPTO.gov site on patents. Even generic network address translation is patented by Mitsubishi, if I'm not mistaken, in the year 1998. There was no prior implementation of network address translation, 1998. Whether, there are a couple of patents which would probably apply to Netfilter IP tables right now. Also some WatchGuard patents on stateful firewalling. That's why we call it connection tracking. Whether or not they are enforceable or there was prior art is a totally different discussion, and I don't want to discuss this at all. I'm still living in a free country. As I said, I'm honest with that. I've decided that a very long time ago.
I have a question related to the packaging of the Netfilter programs. You decided recently to split the Netfilter programs into a user space part and the patch-o-matic.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide this? Because now people are using the recent patch you released with the old user space tools.
The question was recently we split the IP tables package into IP tables and a patch-o-matic package. Short overview about the history. Initially, there was only the IP tables user space package, which only contained user space code. Then there were normal patches against the kernel contained in the IP tables user space package. So when you downloaded it, you had the user space code and a couple of patches for the kernel. Then those patches got more and more. I think at certain times we had about 80 to 90 patches in there. just because we receive so many contributions of so many nice and new features which we all want to include because we're so extensible. As I said, extensibility is not always a virtue. Then we invented the Patch-O-Matic system. Using Patch-O-Matic, I don't know how many of you have used it. Using Patch-O-Matic, you can add new NetFilter features against your kernel. You're prompted for all the new features. And first, the kernel you have installed is checked whether or not a particular feature is in the kernel already. And if it's not, you get prompted if you want to apply it. And if you press yes, it is tested if it would apply cleanly. And if it applies cleanly, it is applied. And the patches are split in several repositories. You have submitted patches, which have already been submitted to the kernel, pending patches, which are currently pending for kernel inclusion. You have base patches, which are non-conflicting patches. Then there are extra patches, which are sort of more experimental, and so on and so on. So the Patch-O-Matic subsystem was again part of IP Tables user space. But then something happened. IP Tables user space turned out to not have that many bugs anymore. So there was no need for releasing IP tables or releasing new IP tables versions. But I just released new IP tables versions because Patch-O-Matic changed so often. And now I've splitted Patch-O-Matic into a separate package, so Patch-O-Matic can be released more frequently than IP tables. Because it doesn't make sense to release a new IP tables version when nothing has changed. Just the Patch-O-Matic, which was glued to IP tables. So this is the reason why.
But now some targets are now incompatible with the old IP tables.
Yeah, so, well, if you... there is no perfect solution to it. If you use certain new features from Patch-O-Matic...
They cannot be used with the old IP tables.
Yes, they cannot be used with the old IP tables. I mean, there are CVS snapshots if you really want to keep track of what is recently going on. This is stuff which is under development. It's changing. There are incompatibilities added. It's like if you use anything from Patch-O-Matic which is not in the pending or submitted repository, it will not work. The same thing happens with the kernel. If you use IP tables 1.2.5 or something, which is, you know, like 1.5 years old by now, and you run a 2.4.18 kernel, you will not be able to use the TTL mesh or TTL target. Because the user space didn't support TTL matching 1.5 years ago. The only thing with regard to compatibility we make sure is that when a new kernel version comes out which contains new features, you can still use the old IP tables user space command without any problem. Just the new features, you cannot use them. But you can still use the old features with the new kernel. And we also do the opposite, which is quite difficult, that with the new IP tables version, you can still configure a 2.4.3 kernel, for example. We need to be forward and backward compatible, and this really is a pain in the ass. We are talking about a 2.4 stable kernel, and I don't think that we have the right to introduce any incompatibilities during the stable kernel series. We can add new features, and if people want to add new features, well, they can be asked to compile a new user space, but we cannot just introduce incompatibilities. It has happened recently with the owner match, and it was a mistake. I thought we had made sure, but in the end it turned out that there was an incompatibility. So this was unintentional mistake. Okay, so I think we can... One last question. Okay, but this is really the last one. It's not even 2.5 only. It's not sure whether it will get in 2.5 at all.
Okay, but I want to try it today.
You cannot try it today. There is pieces of code in CVS, and there is lots of pieces of code which only I have on a couple of my machines right now, because I only want to release it at a point where people can at least run it. Might be errors and bugs and something, but I don't want any... I thought about the concepts, and I had discussed that within the NetFilter core team and with our NetFilter people, and I want to have this implementation sort of in a complete state before there are any further discussions. If I release something right now, people will take it apart and, well, we could do this and that, and then it's again a whole discussion over, you know, lots of hundreds or thousands of emails. And no, I first want to have this to a certain degree working. Parts of it are already there. You can see in CVS, you can see libnfnetlink, you can see not complete implementation of libctnetlink, the user space stuff. You can see in Petromatic the nfnetlink ctnetlink patch, but pkt tables itself is not released. You can see a maybe 15 to 20% completed libpkt tables. So as I said, it's not something which is going to appear in the next 2 weeks or something. It's really big. I mean, if you talk about the current IP table stuff, I recently did some statistics. I think it was about 56,000 lines of code or something. So it's, and fundamental architecture changes to that. So it's not a small project. Okay. So I'd like to thank you for your interest in IP tables at all. I have right now an appointment with social research people from, they do a sociological study, so if you want to ask me some further questions, try to meet me later, like, I don't know, somewhere in this afternoon, but right now I need to leave. So.